You know, a few days ago, we had Mike Baer on as we were talking about his television show Uncovering Aliens with the Science Network and the channel. And one of the cases, of course, we're going to talk about with you tonight. It is absolutely riveting. If you're into UFOs, make sure you're listening to this. If you're not, it'll get you to start listening. Thomas Reed joins me next as we talk about A Close Encounter of the Fourth Kind. And let me tell you about Thomas Reed, award-winning South Beach fashion photographer who has held positions in upper management at a couple of major companies. His family is at the center of a very historic UFO case, which we're going to be talking about, assigned by Jacques Vallée, classification of a CE4, which is a close encounter of the fourth kind. The third kind is the physical evidence. The case has many layers, as is deeply entwined, and remains a top-notch case. And here he is, Thomas Reed on Coast to Coast. Hello, Thomas.
How are you, sir?
I'm good. Good to be
pleasure
with
to be here.
Hey, South Beach. I love South Beach. I used to get down there a lot. Haven't been down there in years, but great spot, huh?
Yeah, I loved it. I actually lived in Boynton Beach, and I'd travel back and forth to South Beach, and actually moving back there as soon as I sell my house here in Tennessee. So,
oh, really?
You sell me.
Yeah.
I'm on my way already. I miss it terribly.
The work that you did down there as a fashion, that's where you got to be. If you're a fashion photographer, that's where
sure.
you are.
I had the largest children's model management company there for about 20 years.
Wow.
And
okay, so you
loved it.
You missed it, didn't you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was 20-something degrees here today.
I had to get you in the Midwest. I was in St. Louis a few weeks ago. It was like in the minus numbers. Very cold. Way too cold.
It's been a tough week everywhere, yeah.
Sure has. Anyways, tell me a little bit about you, Thomas, before we get into this incredible case that happened to your family.
About our family or the case for me personally?
You
or?
Personally first.
Okay. I started years ago. I'm going to say that in the 80s, I was actually a photographer for Club Med, where I did a lot of shooting with them, and Kent, Connecticut was one of the spots I actually worked at, and then took on some positions photographing bands. I worked with Blue Oyster Cult, Fabulous Thunderbirds, Stray Cats, and became a stage manager for a club in West Hartford, actually, and Three Dog Night was one of them. I worked with Ted Nugent, and I got really a lot of publicity, I guess, and a lot of my style of photography, I guess, was just interesting to people. And so I took it to South Beach, and I started shooting for Wilhelmina and, a lot of them.
Gosh, great agencies. Huh?
Yeah, Michelle Pommier was one of the ones that I shot the most for, MSP, Anderson Green Entertainment.
Were you down there when Versace got shot?
Yes, matter of fact, I had the camera system in his home.
Oh my gosh!
Yep, my office was just off of Oakland and Fort Lauderdale, and I got the call in my office. And at the time, I really wasn't. At first, we really weren't sure if it was really him or not. And then there was this big, conspiracy thing: did his wife have it done? His daughter, you know, was his lover, you know, that kind of thing. And we had some camera systems in there that I guess some of the footage that they found that kind of put a little bit of a more of a factual, you know, what really happened. I guess he was actually killed right there in the steps. But no, I don't know much more about it than that. But yes, I was actually in my office when I got the word, and I don't think he was killed. Maybe 10 miles from where I was sitting.
Yeah, it was an unbelievable story.
I love it down there.
Yeah.
I love that whole Lincoln Square area.
Oh, it's super.
Right.
Is Ricky Martin still got his club down there, or did he close?
You know, I don't know. I really don't know, to be honest with you. I left there in 2006 and haven't really been back since.
Joe's Crab. It's the best place.
Yeah, you know it well.
Yeah, it's a fun time.
Yeah, I used to hang out at East Del Rey a lot. You know, that was one of my spots.
Yeah.
And I used to go to Sanibel. That was one of my hangouts. And got it.
Well, you'll be back there soon enough.
Yeah, St. Augustine's another one I love. That's a nice little town.
How's the housing market in Tennessee?
How's the housing market?
Yeah.
Well, let's just say that now's the time to sell mine.
Good. Let's do that. Okay, so let's talk about this case, this incredible case that happened to your family. Give us the history of it.
Well, it started when we were Sheffield, Massachusetts is the town that we lived in. And my mother had a horse farm. We had about 80 acres, about 35 on one side, 40-something on the other. And we raised horses. We were very active with this Great Barrington Fair that used to have a lot of every September there were races. It was very lucrative for a lot of the local people there. So there was a lot of people in the area that had a lot of interest in horses. And we used to all hang out at these particular restaurants, which my mother actually owned one. She owned the one called The Village on the Green.
Ah, okay.
113 Main Street. It was a restaurant my mother owned. And with that, it was a small community. And I'd say it was 1966 when the first time that we and others had started to see and have a rumble of something happening in the area, because what took place with our family wasn't isolated to us. I mean, it was very well known. A lot of people knew about it. Children were talking about it. But to give you an idea, in 1967 was really the first time that, it's an account that troubled us for a very long time. My brother and I were sitting in our room. I was on the bunk bed. He was on the top, and and we were in conversation. And there's a window at the foot of the bed, and I was actually looking out the window. And there was something very odd about this feeling that we used to have, and that's something that I still to this day have quite a. When I talk to other people that I've had an experience or haven't, I can kind of tell by if they share this with me, or they try to describe this feeling. And to me, it's like a three moon feeling. If you go outside, it's a full moon, you seem to have this little bit of a more energy. You can stay out a little bit later. You can have that little drink or what have you.
Yeah, but it affects you.
There's like this weird, it's not an anxiety. It's just this energy that you feel. And we felt that. And we were wide awake as children. We were supposed to be going to school the next morning. And we just couldn't. It was this, I can't explain it.
You were hyper. You were hyped up about this.
Yeah, but it wasn't, that's just it. It was kind of coming from within. It was just something that we were feeling. It was almost like a vibe.
Yeah.
And so we're trying to find out what's going on. We're looking out the window. There was a crack in the door over here. And we were like, are we scared of it? You know, what's going on? And I see this ring through the window. It was probably 15, 20 feet out. And it didn't really look more like a flashlight, really, because it was more like an outer ring. And out that window was nothing more than a brook. There wasn't a home behind us. And that house is still there today. And while I'm looking at it, my brother and I were in conversation. And the last thing I remember is it was as if I got caught in an ocean wave. If you've ever been caught in an undertow.
No, thank God I haven't.
Yeah, well, if you take Florida, I mean, I've been tossed around in a wave before, and this is the best thing that I can use as a simile or a metaphor to describe how it felt. But it just flipped. I felt like I flipped. I felt like I was inverted. I maybe a second or two, and it actually was as if I went. My head was on the floor. My feet were up in the air. It's what it really felt to me, and I can still pick up on that. How that felt. And next thing I know, my brother tells me he's speaking to an empty room. He talks about a flash that took place in the house, and he had run out to get my mother, who was actually bunking with my grandmother, as I had some family members in from Hollis, Queens, and they were, you know, taking over some of the rooms. So he ran into my mother's room, tried to wake her, and my grandmother was in there as well. Then he couldn't seem to get them to respond, and this is actually part of what was shown in Uncovering Aliens the other day. And so she finally comes out of it and is speaking to my son momentarily, and they were going to run to our bedroom to see if I was there. And next thing, my family, my mother, my grandmother, my brother, all remember what sounded like a series of doors slamming.
Huh.
And then my mother couldn't find my brother. And that's kind of really the first major...
And where were you? Really,
I was actually on... I remember being in like a 15 by 15 area that was white, And I remember a hallway that wrapped around like a question mark. And I was, I remember seeing my brother there that same night. I remember beings to my left. I was like almost escorted in some way. I remember part of, if you break a, say a donut in thirds, I remember this top part of this donut area being very dark. There were images that were shown on a, what looked like a huge wraparound screen. My brother was standing behind me at one point. We all have different memory from the same night, which makes it so interesting. And I don't remember too much more than that. My brother had a leg brace. My brother had a club foot. And he remembers some attention to his club foot. I don't remember being loud in there. I remember a tapping sound that you might pick up from like an MRI machine momentarily. We were not really, I don't think that we were 100% alert. I think that there was some type of a electromagnetic field of some sort. We believe that's what it was because of what happened later on and the magnetic energy or field they found around my brother's vehicle later on.
Was there any missing time, Thomas?
Well, my mother actually came running out of the house looking for us. My grandmother stayed on the porch. My mother was, I don't want to use those corny words, but she was frantic, really. She came running out of the house, yelling for us. And we had a lot of land, and we had stables, and we had little lean-tos back there for some homes. So she, and there was a baler we had up on the top of the hill. So she jumped on her horse, actually, and we had floodlights. And there was a phone, actually, that was on a telephone pole that was about 50, 60 yards from the house, too. So she just lit up the place the best she could, and she went on horseback. You know, what else are you going to do? We were out in the middle of nowhere, really. And the house and that land, you can still see it today if you drive down Route 7. Everything's still there. We moved the house, though.
Were the horses going crazy?
You know, I don't know, really. Yeah. I don't think so. I know that there was an environmental change with crickets and katydids that erupted, not this night, but another time. But I never asked her that, to be honest with you. But she fired up she got on her horse, she got on Jubal, and she went up the hill, and she started looking over the property for us. And momentarily, and I don't know how much longer this was, my brother has spoken to my mother in depth more about this, but it was about 3 or 4 hours before my mother actually found my brother and I not far from a stable. Now, we were still in our pajamas. I was on a hill, which was about maybe 30 or 40 feet from the front of the house between a tree and a little stable there. My brother was below me in the driveway, not too far from the front of the house, and we were just kind of staring at each other. And my mother jumped off the horse. She ran over. She grabbed my younger brother first. And swooped me up too, brought us into the home. She placed us on the table, on the kitchen table in the window there. And I was kind of facing the screen porch. My brother was looking out the front of the house. My mother was actually near the sink. And the grandmother came over and she gave us a baby aspirin of all things and orange juice, wrapped us in towels and brought us into the living room. And there was a fire going and I slept on the sofa that night and my brother slept on the love seat. And that was really the first time that we really had anything
but at that point,
bizarre happen.
But you couldn't really pinpoint what happened at that point.
Well, it was just such a surreal thing to have happened, and we were young, and
I mean, but you really didn't see anything specifically at that point?
Oh, no, we saw figures, we saw I saw what this craft that looked very pewter almost. I referenced it as looking almost like a turtle shell, and like a very tarnished turtle shell.
How big?
I'd say 50 to 60 feet round.
Okay.
I know exactly where it sat down. I know the area was right past a tree that looked like a wishbone, and on the other side of it was a huge rock about 15 feet tall and about 30 feet long. And I've been there since. I didn't see any lights, to be honest with you. I didn't see any windows. It just looked, first it looked like a huge pile of dirt, to be honest with you. And it was kind of dark out. And that was actually the second time that we had actually seen it. The first time was really nothing that would interest your listeners, but except that we saw it. But that was the first time that anything really
shook
us up.
How close, Thomas, to the first time did you see it, the second time? A day, a week?
It was about 8-9 months.
Okay.
Maybe a year.
So whatever this thing was, it was coming back.
Yeah, well, it was, both times it was in a different spot, but it wasn't far from where it was prior. The first time, it was a little bit down further on this path where it wrapped around, and it was more of in a clearing. This night, it was more tucked away, and it was almost on a little bit of a hill. When I saw it, it was almost on an angle. But it's not easy to really talk about. Believe it or not, I do have a little bit of a it does bring back a lot of memories. But
your family, though, had encounters way before you and your brother did, right?
Well, my mother had something happen to her in 1954 in Moosehead Lake in Maine. I think it was June. And my Uncle Bob and mother and grandmother and his girlfriend Kip were heading out to basically a week up in Maine while he was going to be speaking with an early college. And so they decided to stay on this lake and so on and so forth. They were going to run Bob over to the school. And while they did so, my mother actually got to visit with Kip a little bit, and they got to be somewhat friendly. And that night they turned in, and my mother had a room off the kitchen. Kip had a room off to the back. My grandmother had the master. And, of course, Bob slept on the sofa. And that night, my mother remembers, what she remembers is almost feeling like she was confined to a mannequin. But she could move her feet. She could move her hands. She could. She had an awareness about her, but she couldn't speak or yell. And what she thought were lights either coming in a window or arcing over her bed, she couldn't really be sure exactly, but she was 15 years old. But there was something about her room. It was just kind of glowing or somewhat in some way. And what she saw were these pudgy figures. She referred to them as. She couldn't really make them out. And she would grab these blankets and try to pull herself off the bed and try to, get to her feet or whatever, mm-hmm. just instinctively. But she would just bunch up these blankets in her hand, and she couldn't pull herself or get anywhere. And then she remembers her lower torso being turned to the left and to the right. And at that point, I don't think she had any clue or any idea what was happening. It was like a horrible nightmare to her. And when she finally woke, she heard birds, and she got out of bed. She felt sick to her stomach. It had bothered her to that degree. She went back into the kitchen. My grandmother was already up cooking and walked in. My grandmother has said to me that she looked like she was in immediate need of care, is how she worded it. And then, of course, Kip came in, and she didn't look in any better state than my mother. So my grandmother knew something had happened. They both seemed to be affected in this odd way, and they did their best to try to explain what happened, and they kind of mirrored each other's experience, and then they refused to come back into the cabin that night, and they had found a little spot where they had seen earlier, I guess a spot to launch boats or whatever, and they were going to stay down there. But, of course, it got a little bit cold, and they tried to bring them up on the cabin steps, and they finally did come in. I slept, in the kitchen there, just inside the door. But
so
that was the first time anything really happened to
us. So the family was seeing something, and then during your episodes, other people in the area saw something, right? It wasn't just restricted to your family.
Oh, my God, no. There were about 40 witnesses 7 miles from our home.
Jeez.
At the South Egremont, Massachusetts Country Club. And right here, I've got it right in front of me, and this was actually Jay Hynek actually gave this a valley classification, which in turn really is our case. It's an object was sighted by multiple independent witnesses that had an appearance of acrobatic performance beyond the capability of any known Earth.
Hold on, Thomas. We're going to take this break and come back and talk more. Plus, this case made it to the United Nations. You're going to have to tell us how that happened. Back with Thomas Reed, whose family underwent a close encounter of the fourth kind, which is as close to a human abduction episode as you can get. Now, Tom, tell me a little bit about these childhood sketches that you created that are now displayed at the Roswell UFO Museum.
Oh, sure. It was the next episode that our family had is really what tied this whole thing together. And they were sketched after 1969, and I had I went to my first day of fourth grade, actually, and there were a bunch of pictures that children had drawn from the year before. And I stood in the doorway of the class. I didn't want to go in, and I'm looking at these sketches off to the left under the chalkboard, and a teacher had come to me and said, you know, Thomas, why don't you take your seat? And I remember looking at one of the first ones off to my left there, and I had said, well, they're not green, and they're not from Mars. And she said, how do you know that? And, of course, that made for a long day because everyone knew about our family and our what had happened. And so I actually sketched this little willow tree and some water and a little craft off to the right of it, and it hung in my fourth grade classroom in Searle School, which is now a library. And I have since made copies of it, you know, cleaned it up a little bit, made copies of it. And it's been in Roswell for years, as well as some others. And that all stemmed from the episode in 1969, which was when I was leaving a competition riding horses. And that's when my family actually ended up selling their property and selling the restaurant and moving out of town and trying to put it all behind us. But that one involved my grandmother, my mother, my brother, myself, and I can tell you about that if you like. I can jump in there. This one was the one that was actually witnessed from that Juggin Resort. We were going down Route 7. I was leaving Butternut Basin Ski Resort, which in September there was a horse competition, and we're in a station wagon. And it was about maybe 7 o'clock at night. My brother was in the back seat with me. My grandmother was in the passenger seat up front. My mother was driving. And I guess we were about as far as Ashley Falls area and stopped to get some candy. And I'd gotten a brown ribbon, so I was pretty upset. And a bite to eat. And we were starting to head back towards our house. And off to the right of the car was kind of open, remember that, and then we came along this road on the way back to our home, which had some high hills off to the left of the car. It was like a two-lane road, and this left side was pretty high, and the right side of the road was open, maybe railroad tracks, type of thing, off to the right, and we saw these lights in the trees, above the trees, back in the woods, and I was giving my brother a fireball and candy, and my grandmother had always warned me not to give it to him because he was too young, but he could choke and that sort of thing. And she was turning around and looking at me.
Those were those hard little red candies, if I remember.
Yeah, those little big red ones, yeah. And I used to love them, and he wasn't supposed to have them. And, God, that got me spanked more than once. But anyway, so we're looking at the lights off to the left of the car, and they just became more and more pronounced. And my brother and I started looking at them, obviously. It was about maybe 8 o'clock at night. And it almost looked like a bunch of searchlights in the woods, almost like if something was hovering and you had the high-powered directional lights flipping back and forth. And to some degree, I think it was because we were moving. Maybe you see the flickers, you know, that flipped it, you know, off to the left. But no, it was more than that. It was just, they were almost like they were searching. And the next thing we remember, all of us, is that the car kind of started to just kind of slowly coast off to the right of the road. We could hear the stones that under the car hitting the tank and being picked up by the tires. And it got very, very still, very quiet, like a dead calm almost. It was just that weird vibe in the air. Everything became very silent. You couldn't, it was barely like you hear a whisper. It was very creepy. It was very just...
No insects, nothing.
No. No, and this is what ended up being spoken about at the UN, what happened and how we all felt collectively at this moment. It just became almost like you really weren't even there. It was just that you were like part of something, but nothing else around you was existing. It was just like as if you were in a different dimension of some sort. It just was like dead.
Were you all picked up into the craft?
Well, we don't know. What happened here was that we sat there and kind of like in awe for a moment and listening. And I remember looking out the side. I remember being conscious because I was looking out the right side of the window.
You were on the ground or were you floating up?
No, we were in the car. We were on the ground.
On the ground in the car.
Right. And then there was this explosion, for lack of a better word, of katydids and crickets that was just erupted in a way that, if I do a PowerPoint, I just crank it up because it put chills down your arms. It was wham, it was everything just erupted at once. And then the next thing we remember, I was in this huge bay. It was probably about the size of an airplane hangar. It was very dark. I was by myself. There were some types of carts of something to the right of me. If this was a football field, I would have been at the 5-yard line, facing across the field.
Huh. All right.
And it was that big. It was dark. I couldn't see much. I didn't see lights coming in from the top, but I did see, eventually I saw what looked like a light about, I'm going to say maybe 50 or 60 yards in front of me. And a figure came in, which did not look much different than a human figure. I'm not going to, it wasn't one of these gray things that you hear
right.
reference so much.
But I mean, did it look somewhat different from a human?
It pretty much looked like, if I were to be completely honest here, it would look half human and a little bit half more of a, it had an overbite looking thing. It was wearing a whitish outfit. It was not like a gray thing. It was almost ghostly white.
Did it have hair?
No, it didn't have hair. And I looked fairly closely, and I saw five of them at one point. I do not believe what people reference as eyes or eyes. To me, they just look like big lenses. I've thought about that and thought about my entire life.
You meant like sunglasses?
Something that's maybe embedded or placed or incorporated into their skin, maybe of some sort. I do not believe that they were an eye. I could be wrong. I don't know. I was a kid, but that's what it looked like to me.
Did they scare you?
I was in a weird funk, and that's another thing that people ask me. You know, it's why would I behave? You know, why would I go? Why would I be so apt to go along with it?
I'm not sure you had much of a choice.
Well, I would have ran, but there are times when I felt very, very panicked, and I'll tell you about that. That's what happened. But other times, it was just like I had no, like you said, I had no choice. It was almost like I was in a funk, like I was in, like maybe the. Your mind operates with certain electromagnetic pulse, and maybe I think there's a way to manipulate that and to get you to go into more of a sleep mode, and they can just kind of drag you around and do whatever they want with you, and that's something that I've got some strong feelings on. But here's what happened with this. I actually, this individual, this figure that was probably about, now I was 10, and I don't think it was much bigger than me, came in maybe 4 or 5 steps, if I'm remembering correctly.
So you're about 4 feet tall, maybe a little bigger.
Yeah, and I actually began to approach it. It made a movement towards me. For some reason, I guess I knew to go to him. I felt maybe a little calmer than I continued. But when I got to this figure, I was abruptly grabbed on my left shoulder, and I was taken out of room. Behind him, that door which you came in,
mm-hmm.
I went to that door. I took a very sharp right. Now, these walls were extremely high.
Is somebody pushing you at this point or what?
No, it's kind of behind me a little bit and kind of like, yeah, in some respects you could say that, more like bringing me along, not mm-hmm. pulling me, but making sure that I was going forward. And so I didn't really see him when I was being pushed so much, but I could feel him and I could see him off to my left, but it was almost like, I was more concerned about, I was looking at these hallways, which were very narrow and very tall. And I'm going to say that they're maybe about 15 feet high. At the end of this hallway, which I think couldn't have been more than 20 or 30 feet, I took a quick left. It came to a direct T, left or right. I went left, and I was brought directly into this room. And when I got into this room, this entire front wall bowed in like a coffee can, you know. And so the middle would bow close to you, and on each end there were pockets. And that would have been, if you can picture this, that would have been what I was staring at. And the back wall, my back was flat, and the other two sides of the walls were flat as well, but this front wall bowed inward. And I sat on this little stool thing or whatever it was, like a whitish, bright whitish thing. And there were two figures off to my left that were very disturbing to me. I've tried very hard to make sense of it.
What do you mean by disturbing?
They looked very different. They looked like an ant, like a cross between an ant and...
How about a praying mantis?
You know, my brother has asked me that. He says, you know, think it could just be that. And What we saw looked like it had very stick legs. It was. It almost looked like a cross between if a spider had lived here hundreds of thousands of years ago, like a prehistoric spider is what it looked like to me. But it had a head. I've looked at a lot of insects. Looked at the head. It almost looked like a head of a football with ant, like red ant eyes, you know, how they're kind of laid on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
And it had like an orangey gold look to it. The body was more teardropped, and the legs on it were very stiff and straight.
How many
it
legs?
Had rings.
Two legs?
Two. Okay. And it had very rings on it, like wine-colored rings on the legs. And I've had a lot of illustrations done on this, and I finally have got one right now that I'm pretty – everybody that who saw it in our family, my brother especially, that's what we saw. And that's the best that we can come up with without – going too far with it. I'd rather leave something out than add something we didn't see. But that is really what we saw. My brother thinks it was smaller than me, and he was younger, so you would think he would think it was
right.
bigger.
Did it look more insect-looking than human?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Well, yeah.
Unlike the other ones that were there.
Yes, it looked like a spider that had been manipulated with some human and other genes. It looked like a combination of a spider, a human, and something else. And they threw it in a blender, and they had their day with it, and voila, this is what we have.
What was the role of this thing, this creature?
When we came in, there were two. There was one facing a wall to the left side of this, where this wall came in with like a can, there were two pockets, the one on the left and to the right. To the right, there were figures that look somewhat like a mix of a human and what some people would refer to as a gray.
Okay.
And then in the other pocket, there were these two characters. Now, I was sitting in the back, and there was one behind me, more like a human figure behind me. There's always someone to my left. Why that is, I don't know. There's always a figure on my left. And then these two over here were looking into a wall. I don't know what they were doing. I think there was something in the wall. They were. When I say looking into a wall, I mean they were within feet away from it, almost staring into it. They didn't move much. They stayed there, almost looked like part, like a figurine. But then at one point, its head turned, the one closest to me, which was actually taller than the other one, turned its head to me a little bit, scanned right by me, almost like a camera would on a security camera mm-hmm. on a building. And then I don't know what happened. I just came out of whatever it was. I just had to get out of there. I leaped off this thing I was sitting on. I ran out the right corner thing on the opposite side of where they were.
Where were you going to go?
Well, I don't know. I just ran. And I ran through this little area here, and I came into a hallway. I burst out this room, and when I got into this hallway, it was huge. It looked like a huge Y. And I came into this Y, and in the center of this area that I came into was so big and so open, you could have run an eight-car highway through there.
Might That's you have big... been on a craft?
Oh, I was on a craft.
You were for sure.
Unless it was some building by the government, but this thing was massive. And what is so interesting about this is that when I came out into this area, the way this was set up, it was if you took a Y and you twisted it kind of on an angle, so it was the bottom of the Y. Take a Y and flip it upside down. So ahead of you, you've got this main artery, and then you've got these other two smaller arteries coming into it. I came in just off of one of those smaller arteries, and looking down this main hallway or this artery, you could have driven. It was as wide as a 4-to-6-lane highway. And what's interesting about this interest area, too, is that these walls in this Y were not just squared off. They bowed outward, which to me would indicate being able to allow for a lot of traffic. So you had this Y, which almost would have been able to route people lots at a time through and giving them room to get around into these hallways by having these outer walls bow outward. I was immediately grabbed, taken back in, and now I was placed on this table. And I know you've probably heard this a lot, but I was laid down on this table, and this cage came over me, which was in two parts. This lower part came over me, which I thought now I was going to be reprimanded. You know, I was going to, you know, this was not going to be a good day. And then, not that it was anyway, but I was just at this point. So the second part of this cage came over the top one. They kind of came down together, but they never, I thought they were to keep me in place, but they never actually touched my body. There was actually room between me and the cage, and I could actually see my feet underneath it. And there were cylinder holes in it. They were oval holes. And I remember that there were hands coming through the holes. I believe there was something being put on me or touching me or what have you, mostly on my left side again. And I felt some taps to the head. And the next thing I know after that, I'm back in this room that I originally came in on, this big black open area. And then, boom, I'm back in the car again. It's like, boom, you're back in the car.
Now,
again.
And did any of the family members say, where'd you go?
Oh, no, we all remember different moments from that. I remember hearing screams. I remember hearing what I think, I can't be sure, was my mother calling out for me. She said she did, and I thought it hurt her.
We'll continue it, Thomas, when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM.